Thank you, Hugh. And let me just ask first, can you see the UNFCCC landing page that I'm up on now?
Yes.
Okay, good. I think my task is to try to tell you the outcomes of Cancun, how that will be taken forward this year, and I'll make a couple of subjective comments about how that might fit in with investment at the same time. But to save you all a lot of angst and time later, what I'd like to just show you immediately is if you look at the front page of the Climate Change Secretariat's website, on the left side you'll see a few blue buttons under Cancun Agreements, yes? If you then click, as I'm clicking now, on the Cancun Agreements assessment, there it is, this will give you an overview of what I am saying, so there's no need to actually remember it while I'm saying it. And it's also an attempt to get rid of the jargon and explain what Cancun agreements actually mean to people who aren't necessarily part of the process or up with the jargon. So you can also refer other people to this. And also this particular page will take us through the next few months in continually adding updates to show what exactly is happening in terms of what governments promise to do. So let me start. I think the Cancun agreements do represent a set of significant decisions by the international community to address the medium to long-term challenge of climate change, but also to take concrete action in the short to medium term to speed up the global response. So to be effective in the short to medium term, the new institutions agreed at Cancun now need to be established within the timelines that governments set. Now, the Cancun also represents key steps forward in capturing plans to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and to help developing nations protect themselves from climate impacts. But to be effective in the medium to longer term, governments also have to progress this year towards greater clarity on how they will achieve a higher global ambition to cut greenhouse gases, especially by 2020. And the reason is that the promises now agreed from all countries, both industrialized and developing, are only 60% of what is needed through to 2020, according to the science. And at some point between 2015 and 2020, global emissions will have to peak to stay below the agreed two degrees rise in average global temperatures. So what are the main objectives of the Cancun Agreement first? And I think the main objectives can be summarized like this. It's to establish clear objectives for reducing greenhouse gas emissions over time to keep below 2 degrees. It's about encouraging the participation of all countries in reducing those emissions in accordance with each country's different capabilities. It's to ensure the international transparency of the actions which are taken by countries and to ensure that global progress towards the long-term goal is reviewed. And the official formal international review starts in 2013 through 2015. And I think that's going to be important also for the private sector and investment to reflect the changing risk horizons that are certainly, I think, going to keep hitting us as the years go by, hopefully towards the positive rather than negative, but certainly there will be changing risk horizons. The next objective is to mobilize the development and transfer of clean technology, getting it to the right place at the right time and to the best impact. Then the objective to mobilize and provide adequate funds in the short term and in the long term, specifically to help developing countries take greater and effective action to reduce their own emissions and adapt to the impacts of climate change. And the very concrete work this year to establish effective institutions and systems which can ensure these objectives that I've just outlined are implemented successfully. So the key agreements that were reached at Cancun towards these objectives, why are they significant? And I think they're significant for four main reasons. They're significant because they form the basis for the largest collective effort the world has ever seen to reduce emissions in a mutually accountable way, notwithstanding the fact that they're still not ambitious enough. They include the most comprehensive package ever agreed to help developing nations deal with climate change. They offer business and investors the most comprehensive framework yet devised to reward investment in sustainable and climate-related energy strategies and development of technologies on a global rather than a purely national scale. and work has to be done to make sure that that happens, both from the government side and from the private sector. And, as I mentioned, they include this formal schedule for nations to review progress made towards those objectives. Specifically then, let's turn now to the new institutions that will be developed, and these include three main areas. First, and the most significant from an investment point of view, probably in the short to medium term, is the Green Climate Fund, which will house the international management, the deployment, and the accountability of long-term funds for support to the developing world. The timeline on that is the transitional committee. The transitional committee, which will design the fund, will start work at the end of April. So that's the end of this April. So getting a say into that design is something that you will have already been doing, but you will need to take forward perhaps even more energetically very, very soon. The new fund will support the projects, the programs, the policies, and other activities in developing countries using thematic funding. Again, how is that going to work? And as you, as most of you will know, the industrialized countries have committed to mobilize $100 billion by 2020 through a mix of public and private finance sources. How will that be done? How will we build up to that? This has to still be agreed. And as you also may know, the fund is going to be administered by a trustee, but the interim trustee will be the World Bank. Separate from the longer-term finance is the Fast Start Finance up to 2012. Governments have said they will provide, industrialized governments will provide $30 billion in Fast Start Finance to kickstart the work in developing countries on climate action up to 2012. So that's the link, if you like, between money now and money in the future. Governments are supposed to submit a complete overview of this funding by May 2011 to us, so May this year, and that work does seem to advance, and I expect that to be on track. The second mechanism is the technology mechanism, and that is to get clean technologies to the right place at the right time to the best impact, as I said. The timeline for that is that it should be fully operational in 2012. The technology mechanism in particular is where governments have actively asked for a private sector partnership with public action, specifically to bring energy efficiency and renewable energy technologies at scale to a commercial level in the developing world. They've asked for direct help on this one. What is it that you need? The third institution would be an adaptation framework to boost international cooperation on adaptation, protecting from climate change. I think this is the one that's going to take perhaps more time. It's the least advanced in terms of exactly what's going to happen. Last but not least, though, is a registry will be created and is being created where developing countries will detail the voluntary national plans that they are putting forward to limit greenhouse gas emissions. So that's on a national scale. And how the registry will match those plans with the financial and technology support from industrialized countries that will allow the developing countries to achieve them. So this should be an important window, I think, into exactly what investment opportunities emerge at scale in emerging economies that you're interested in. Going forward this year, a major issue remains the future of the Kyoto Protocol, and this is one of the issues with Cancun, that it was a major step forward, but it did leave some significant issues on the table, and the Kyoto Protocol is, without question, the leading issue in that regard. What is clear is that unless there is clarity on this at Durban, the next UN Climate Change Conference in Durban at the end of the year, then a gap will appear between the end of the first commitment period of industrialized countries to cut greenhouse gases and future commitment periods. It should be noted, though, that governments have said that they want to avoid a gap, so that's the work that they need to take forward quickly. The fact remains that the protocol is the only existing international agreement that commits industrialized countries to reduce emissions under a framework of commitment, transparency, and compliance. So how do you take forward those unique aspects of the protocol into the future? at Cancun as well, the Kyoto Protocol's clean development mechanism, the mechanism that encourages investment into lower cost carbon projects in developing countries, was strengthened to drive more major investments into projects, especially to those geographical areas which have not yet benefited as much as they could or perhaps should. So a lot of stuff being done in China and India, not much being done in places like, for example, Africa. And this will be encouraged in future by means of a loan scheme in countries that have fewer than 10 activities registered. Governments also agreed to allow carbon capture and storage projects in the Clean Development Mechanism, and that's provided that governments can agree on the technical and safety requirements for that, and that is another issue that is supposed to be decided in Durban. CCS, carbon capture and storage, of great importance to several countries, not least to oil-producing countries, and also to the global oil industry. And again, last but not least on this, governments also agreed that in a second Kyoto Protocol commitment period, whatever that is and in whatever form it is and whether we do go forward with that, the emissions trading and project-based mechanisms would continue to be available to developed countries as a means of meeting their own emission reduction targets, in other words, offsetting the emissions. Let me now just summarize quickly for you what countries are now responsible for to reduce emissions on a national basis following Cancun, and there's interesting developments here, I think. First, then, on developed industrialized country emission reduction targets, all industrialized countries submitted economy-wide emission reduction targets. These will now be published and will be followed up with a process of international assessment on the implementation of these targets. In other words, how are you going to deliver what you said you're going to deliver? In 2 weeks' time, the first meeting of the negotiation process is in Bangkok, and that meeting will include significant workshops around this particular subject. So we'll see as early as 2 weeks' time how countries are going to start creating the transparency, the greater transparency that they've promised to deliver this year on this specific point. Cancun also requires industrialized countries to boost the regular reporting of progress. That's reporting on their emissions by reporting on it every 2 years. And guidelines for that strengthened reporting are to be worked out, and government's views on how to do this are now being compiled by the Climate Change Secretariat. And as I say, as these things happen, you will get updates on the page that I showed you. Finally, industrialized countries agreed to create low carbon development strategies or plans, taking it forward. And I think that all this should increase the transparency for investors across the risk spectrum. On the developing country side, developing countries also submitted their plans to limit the growth of their emissions, and these national plans are all aimed at achieving a deviation in emissions relative to what otherwise would be their business as usual by 2020. The registry, which I mentioned, is going to be an important tool, I think, specifically as well from an investment perspective to see what opportunities are available. And again, once more, last but not least, governments did agree to continue work towards establishing one or more new market-based mechanisms to enhance and promote the effectiveness of cost-effectiveness of emission reductions on a global scale. And that, too, is on the agenda to be decided at Durban. So I think it's important to note that most governments clearly understand that the private sector needs essential components to take stronger bottom-up action, and that is tools to lower investment risk, a coordinated international set of markets, incentives, governance, and compliance, and the ability to act quickly and at scale. But what governments need now is more detailed advice on how to construct these components, which they're now doing, and to use the existing multilateral systems they have to leverage greater investment in a way that makes sense for the risk and return objects of the private sector. Thank you.